The economy's growing slowly.
And in London, the Olympics brand police are on patrol. Hey, everybody, I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, July 27th. Gross domestic product out this morning. That is a measure of economic growth in this country, up 1.5%. That's down from the 2% growth we saw earlier this year.
And if you've had just about enough this week of hearing about Europe and GDP and earnings reports, we will talk to Kevin Smith, the filmmaker, highly profane individual, though he did not swear during our conversation. We didn't have to bleep anything or even cut anything. It was great. We're talking about his new TV show that was just online only, and now it's actually going to be a TV show. Nothing's ever done that before. And being a podcast mogul, I guess. That's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The Commerce Department says gross domestic product grew 1.5% in the second quarter. That is down from a growth rate of 2% in the first part of the year.
GDP is a measure of all the goods and services the country produces. It's considered to be one of the most important measures of economic growth. Here to help us make sense of all of this is David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist for J.P. Morgan Funds. Good morning, David.
Glad to be here.
David, 1.5% growth. Are you happy with that?
No, I don't think anybody should be happy with 1.5% growth. Clearly, this economy has the potential to grow much faster than that. But I will say that this number was in line with our expectations, and they did revise up the last year a little bit. So it looks, you know, the economy grew by about 2.2% over the last year. So it is taxiing forward slowly, but it certainly isn't taking off here.
What about the fact that, growth has been slowing down this year? We saw 2% growth in the first quarter. That slowed down to 1.5%. Is that a concern?
No, I think there may be a degree of statistical noise. We had a very warm winter, if you remember, and often weather disrupts economic activity over the winter. Didn't do that this time around, so we did a little bit better over the winter, 4.1% growth in the fourth quarter, 2% growth in the first quarter. So a slowdown in more normal spring weather is actually really to be expected here.
Is that part of what we're – can we chalk that partly up to some of the slowdowns we've seen in consumer spending and business spending?
Well, I think, for example, auto sales were quite good in the first quarter. They slowed down. That's really what slowed down some of the consumer spending numbers. But overall, there's a lot of hesitancy in the economy, and people are waiting to see. The problem is there's a lot of confusion from policymakers, both the Federal Reserve and the federal government. And so there's a certain lethargy to the economy right now, and that's really what's keeping it slower than we'd like.
We've also gotten a lot of company earnings out this week. Any signs and economic indicators in there?
Well, I think that they do all reflect not just the sluggishness of the U.S. economy, but the downright recession in Europe with, you know, Spanish unemployment today at 24%. But so we can see the slowdown in Europe there, the slowdown in China. But the earnings really do reflect the economy we've had, not just the U.S. economy, but also the global economy.
David Kelly with J.P. Morgan. Thank you, David.
Anytime.
And just taking a quick look at this stage of the morning, at least, it looks like the U.S. markets are relatively happy with the GDP numbers. All the major indices up just a bit. Could change by the end of the day, but that's how it looks right now. Europe had a decent day as well. Markets closing there, generally up around 1%. And in Asia, also an up market. The Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong, up 2%.
A really bad day for Facebook, though. Shares have been plummeting today after some disappointing earnings from Facebook. They've hit a record low this morning.
Not a great status update from Facebook.
No, no. I saw a headline that said Wall Street was unfriending Facebook. Not good.
And Stacey, how's this for an economic indicator? The September issue of Vogue magazine.
I like that. I like that. I'll take that economic
indicator. It's about to come out. Apparently, it's pretty much the Super Bowl of publishing. It's the biggest stage for luxury and high fashion advertisers. And this September issue will have 658 pages of ads alone. Way more than last year. So get ready to page through pretty carefully to find the actual articles. I mean, I read Vogue for the articles.
No one reads Vogue
they're
for the articles.
Somewhere.
I think Vogue and Playboy have that in common.
Well, the heft of Vogue's September issue is kind of a perennial bellwether for the health of the fashion and publishing industries. Here's Marketplace's Mark Garrison with more.
It's so heavy, it's practically a piece of carry-on luggage. Every year, media pundits dust off old jokes about mailmen getting hernias and skinny models too frail to lift the magazine they appear in. At $165,000 for a full-page ad, Vogue must be raking it in. Not exactly, says Steve Cohn, editor-in-chief of Media Industry Newsletter.
You can't totally judge a book by its cover or a book by its ad pages anymore.
Almost nobody pays the sticker price for a full-page ad. Publishers make deals and do discounts, so the fatness of the issue doesn't track perfectly with revenue. And why would a fashion or luxury brand want to be in a magazine so stuffed with ads where it's hard to stand out? Adweek News editor Lucia Moses explains.
When you're in the September issue, you're in very good company. There's definitely a prestige factor of being in there.
For certain brands, skipping Vogue would be unfashionable, maybe even unprofitable. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
So, Jeff, are you traveling this summer at all? Any trips planned?
I am done traveling. Been back and forth to Minnesota, actually, a couple of times. But I'm hoping until Labor Day, that's it for me.
Oh, well, I don't know if you noticed that airfares have been going up, apparently, quite a bit this summer.
They weren't cheap when I needed to fly a couple months ago, you bet.
Yeah, so they have been going up, and also most of the major airlines have been reporting healthy profits. We have Nancy Marshall-Genzer here with more.
Earlier this week, Delta Airlines and U.S. Airways reported profits above analysts' expectations. United didn't do so well, but that's largely because of complications from its messy merger with Continental. But all the consolidation among airlines means fewer seats are available. Ultra-low fares are a thing of the past. And then there are those extra fees. Airline analyst Richard Abulafia says, get used to it.
People had this image, oh, they're charging more and more for a sandwich. There must be a bunch of billionaires in a back room with monocles and top hats, and they're getting rich at our misery. It really wasn't like that at all. It was a story of bankrupt carriers and just general economic unpleasantness.
Abulafia says the surviving airlines can't charge rock-bottom fares if they want to stay afloat. And he says even with stable fares, they have to contend with fickle fuel prices and corporate travelers who are getting more cautious because of the sluggish economy. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The London Olympics begin today, and the 11 big corporate sponsors of the event will begin to bask in the global limelight. They have paid heavily for that privilege, more than $1 billion among them. In return, they expect their association with the Games to be exclusive. And not everybody is happy about that. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Perhaps it was inevitable that the London Olympics would attract the attention of the American anti-consumerist preacher-comedian, the Reverend Billy Talen.
Get the corporations out of the Olympics, please! The Olympics are corrupt!
Here he was in a London street last week, railing against the commercial sponsorship of the Games. But his comic ravings resonate with some Brits. Julian Chain has campaigned against the London Olympics.
This is large corporations who profit. Large corporations are the sponsors. Small people are left aside.
And he says small businesses who've tried to tap into the Olympic spirit have been hammered. A butcher who made a display of sausages in the shape of the five Olympic rings. He was threatened with a $30,000 fine by the brand police. The same for Helen Day of the small O2OH entertainment agency. She tried to promote a trapeze act with five acrobats curled up inside their aerial hoops.
It's laughable, this idea that we as a small entertainment agency would in any way be encroaching on the rights of the Olympic sponsors or, you know, that we're in any way a threat to McDonald's or Coca-Cola. I'd love it if we were, but quite frankly, we're not.
But Ian Twin, who speaks for advertisers, says the Olympic authorities are right to deploy the brand police. After all, the sponsors are paying $1 billion for the Olympic name and logo. They should expect exclusive use.
I think it's a fair return on the investment for the big firms. The Olympics wouldn't be running the way it does now if big companies didn't put their money up front.
But the critics don't like the way the Olympics are running now. This week, at another protest rally, they played the theme tune from the movie Chariots of Fire, invoking a more innocent age of uncommercial, unsponsored Olympics. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
So today marks kind of a quiet digital media milestone. A show created for the streaming video website Hulu is making the jump, in reverse, you might say, to an actual cable network. The movie review show Spoilers debuts on Canada's Space Channel. Spoilers was created by filmmaker Kevin Smith. He wrote and directed Clerks, Mallrats, Dogma, most recently Red State. He also co-hosts a bunch of the country's most popular podcasts. He feeds 2 million followers every day on Twitter and travels the country doing live shows. Today, he is here for our Marketplace Midday Extra interview. Kevin Smith, welcome to Marketplace.
Thanks for having me. That's a heck of an intro. Always makes me feel like I've accomplished something, even though I don't feel accomplished. Like, I feel very lazy all the time. Uh-huh. So when you hear an intro like that, you're just like, wow, that's... who's doing all that stuff?
Well, that gets to something I wanted to ask you. And I'm sort of amazed as a guy who does a job, you know, for 8 hours a day in the bright and early hours of the morning. Mm. People in new media like you who really found success, they do so many different things. I mean, you are podcasting, what, 3, 4, 5 times a week. You've just got a zillion things going on.
Right.
I'm curious how kind of mentally and physically, how do you gear up to make that happen?
Basically, you got to love the sound of your own voice quite a bit. I mean, that's because it's not just doing any job. If I was spinning a bunch of plates doing a bunch of jobs, then no, I wouldn't be doing all those jobs. Mm-hmm. But the jobs break down to very simple exercises and stuff that I would do regardless. And so the idea is then to figure out, can I make a living off of that?
So you're here today ostensibly to talk about this show, Spoilers. It's
yeah.
A movie review show. You get a bunch of people together. You go watch a movie, and then you film them talking with you about it, special guests, stuff like that. What are the elements of that project that fit the successful formula for digital success?
We all love movies, right? So we're talking to the movie-loving audience particularly. So right away, they're kind of, oh, I'm interested in this sort of thing. It's also a premise that involves the audience, whether or not you're there. It's not watching two windbags pontificate on a movie they saw. It's watching one windbag and 40 other normal people pontificate on a movie they just saw. Same kind of thing you do in a chat room online, whether about movies or something else. Same thing you do with your friends when you leave the movie theater on the way out to your car in the parking lot.
When I think about people who have real command of the digital space, you know, the biggest podcasts in the country, for example, like you, Adam Carolla, I wonder, could they have done it if they weren't famous to begin with in the mainstream world?
What a great question. We'll never know, thank God. I'll never know because I started with Clerks, so I've always got that in my back pocket. But I did as much as I could to burn everything down and salt the earth just so that I can stand in the next iteration of my career and be like, I did it without you.
That's just for your own sense of internal integrity? I mean, it's
that's it. I mean, that's what fuels everybody, isn't it? Some sense of internal integrity.
Well,
for
that,
some people,
that and a paycheck rolling in.
But for some people, that paycheck, internal integrity has a lot to do with it. I could make a lot more money in this business if I didn't have internal integrity, man. But I got a barometer inside that says what's better, being more well-paid or being happier. And in a pursuit to be happier, I found out I'm getting more well-paid anyway.
Kevin Smith, podcaster, filmmaker, and host of Spoilers, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
This past weekend here in the L.A. area, police in Anaheim shot and killed an unarmed man. Violent protests and looting erupted. Anaheim is best known, of course, as the home of Disneyland, but there's a lot more to the city than that. Shireen Marisol Meraji has that story.
Anaheim is much more than a resort town, famous for Disney theme parks and Angels baseball. That area where the police shooting took place is packed with low-rent apartment buildings, and most residents are Latino and poor. Nearly 16% of Anaheim residents live below the poverty line. Gustavo Arellano grew up in Anaheim. He also edits the Orange County Weekly. Arellano calls his hometown
the Tragic Kingdom.
That's a nod to the band No Doubt, also from Anaheim.
Over the past decade, you've seen a city that has really put its focus on trying to develop the area immediately around Disneyland and immediately around Anaheim Stadium.
Arellano adds, at the same time, city services have been cut, affecting low-income people the most. City Council member Chris Murray says without the resort areas, Anaheim would be in much worse shape.
Because we have a resort area the caliber that we have, because Disney just invested another $1 billion in Cars Land, we're actually able to, as a city, maintain our reserves and increase services for the first time since the recession started.
Murray says those services are going straight to the poorest neighborhoods in Anaheim. But now the world knows Anaheim is not all happy and magical. Will that affect tourism?
You wouldn't know that there was any disturbance here.
Elaine Kelly with the Anaheim Visitor and Convention Bureau told me that in the resort areas, it's business as usual. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
Computer hackers invaded Las Vegas this week as part of the Black Hat Conference. That's where hackers get together and talk about the latest in security and security breaches. Kim Zetter is a senior reporter for Wired. She was at the conference. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
So this is year 15 of the Black Hat Conference. How has the conference changed since you've been going?
It's gotten more diverse. It used to be quite a lot of security professionals. It's expanded. A lot of researchers are presenting. There are some hackers. A lot more people from different various federal agencies show up, DHS, law enforcement, things like that.
So who is it Black Hat? Is it hacktivists or criminal hackers or all of the above?
Black Hat is much more oriented towards the professional crowd. These are the people who are actually defending systems. So these are security administrators and researchers who are looking into vulnerabilities in systems. So it's kind of a different crowd in that sense. Not too many hackers at Black Hat.
What are some of the big issues coming up at Black Hat this year? Is there anything everybody's talking about?
There are a couple of interesting stories that have gotten some press. One of them that I found particularly interesting was an attack on vulnerabilities in keycard locks in hotels. And what they found was that there's a port at the bottom of the lock on your door, and anyone can actually plug into that port and read data on the lock and unlock the lock. So that was an interesting one. Another interesting one that I found was the iris, some vulnerabilities with iris recognition systems that involved actually creating a synthetic image that would match the real iris image that someone had taken. And in that way, someone could sort of create an image and steal the identity of someone based on their iris.
Kim Zetter is a senior reporter for Wired. Kim, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Stacey, today marks kind of a quiet digital media milestone.
Really?
A show that was created for the streaming video website Hulu is making the jump, in reverse, you could kind of say, to an actual cable network.
Wow.
It's a movie review show. It's called Spoilers, and it's going to debut tonight on Canada's Space Channel. So Spoilers was created by filmmaker Kevin Smith. You know Kevin Smith?
Oh, yes, Clerks.
Right.
Absolutely.
Mallrats, Dogma, Chasing Amy, most recently Red State. Last year, I think, he produced and directed that one. He also co-hosts a bunch of the country's most popular podcasts. He feeds 2 million plus followers every day on Twitter, and he's always traveling the country doing live shows. And now he is here. Kevin Smith, welcome to Marketplace.
Thanks for having me. That's a heck of an intro. Always makes me feel like I've accomplished something, even though I don't feel accomplished. Like, I feel very lazy all the time.
Uh-huh.
So when you hear an intro like that, you're just like, wow, who's doing all that stuff?
Well, that gets to something I wanted to ask you. And I'm sort of amazed as a guy who does a job, you know, for 8 hours a day in the bright and early hours of the morning.
Mm.
People in new media like you who really found success, they do so many different things. I mean, you are podcasting, what, 3, 4, 5 times a week. You've just got a zillion things going on.
Right.
I'm curious how kind of mentally and physically, how do you gear up to make that happen?
Basically, you got to love the sound of your own voice quite a bit. I mean, that's because it's not just doing any job. If I was spinning a bunch of plates doing a bunch of jobs, then no, I wouldn't be doing all those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But the jobs break down to very simple exercises and stuff that I would do regardless. And so the idea is then to figure out, can I make a living off of that?
So you're here today ostensibly to talk about this show, Spoilers.
It's a
movie review show. You get a bunch of people together. You go watch a movie, and then you film them talking with you about it, special guests, stuff like that. What are the elements of that project that fit the successful formula for digital success?
We all love movies, right? So we're talking to the movie-loving audience particularly. So right away, they're kind of, oh, I'm interested in this sort of thing. It's also a premise that involves the audience, whether or not you're there. It's not watching two windbags pontificate on a movie they saw. It's watching one windbag and 40 other normal people pontificate on a movie they just saw. same kind of thing you do in a chat room online, whether about movies or something else. Same thing you do with your friends when you leave the movie theater on the way out to your car in the parking lot.
When I think about people who have real command of the digital space, you know, the biggest podcasts in the country, for example, like you, Adam Carolla, I wonder, could they have done it if they weren't famous to begin with in the mainstream world?
What a great question. We'll never know, thank God. I'll never know because I started with Clerks, so I've always got that in my back pocket. But I did as much as I could to burn everything down and salt the earth just so that I can stand in the next iteration of my career and be like, I did it without you.
That's just for your own sense of internal integrity? I mean, it's
that's it. I mean, that's what fuels everybody, isn't it? Some sense of internal integrity.
Well,
for
that,
some people,
that and a paycheck rolling in.
But for some people, that paycheck, internal integrity has a lot to do with it. I could make a lot more money in this business if I didn't have internal integrity, man. But I got a barometer inside that says what's better, being more well-paid or being happier. And in a pursuit to be happier, I found out I'm getting more well-paid anyway.
Kevin Smith, podcaster, filmmaker, and host of Spoilers, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, I don't know about your first job, but my first job was babysitting.
I babysat when I was in high school, yeah.
How much did you make? How much were you pulling down?
Yeah, it was not much. I would think $3 an hour, maybe.
Yeah, I remember very clearly talking the family I used to babysit a lot for up to $4 an hour and feeling very proud.
Very savvy.
Apparently, we should have driven a harder bargain because the average hourly rate for a babysitter these days is $12.75 per kid.
Inflation, I suppose.
I know, but still. Mm-hmm. That's according to data compiled by the website Urban Sitter. The most expensive babysitting prices are commanded here in New York, $15.50 an hour on average.
Wow. High quality babysitting in New York, maybe?
I mean, I just remember like putting the kid in front of the TV and like, you know, calling boys. So
I don't know how much times have changed in that regard.
I feel like $4 an hour is probably about what that was worth. But times do change.
Well, for my son, I have paid $18 an hour for a very experienced babysitter in one case. But it's expensive. So here's something not related at all. In fact, this is kind of scary if you put it next to a babysitting story. But anyway, this is in Indonesia. There is an orangutan there who has learned to smoke. And this is how easy it is to learn for small furry creatures to learn how to smoke.
It's a gateway drug, too. That's the problem.
And so people who visit the zoo have taken to throwing lit cigarettes into the cage because the orangutan will pick them up and hold them in a very debonair way, apparently, and smoke them down. So they are moving the orangutan. This is a sad story, a happy story, I guess, to an enclosure with an island. So people are really going to have to flick those lit butts across a moat to get them to the orangutan. The orangutan's health, by the way, is apparently just fine.
Well, I guess going to an island is one way to quit smoking, right? It's extreme, but
well,
it works.
Being in a zoo and having your every move managed is also another
who wouldn't need a cigarette
trick.
I mean, seriously. And finally, well, you know, Jeff, you're in Los Angeles and I'm in New York, and this is being the wonders of radio. You have no idea what people are wearing if they're in a suit, if they're in sweats. Mm-hmm. But apparently, you should beware the casual Friday and what you wear because your coworkers are silently judging you.
Really? Even when I come in at 1 a.m, I don't think they're judging me then. But for a normal person, perhaps, yeah.
Apparently, from a new survey from Adecco, found that nearly 60% of the people surveyed said shorts weren't appropriate workwear, even on casual Fridays. 76% said no to flip-flops and ripped jeans. Those were offensive. And this is my personal favorite.
Okay.
Nearly half said they were offended by the white sock, black shoe combo.
Oh, yes. So that's horrible.
I love the white sock, black shoe combo. It reminds me of my science teacher in high school.
Could you combine these answers, mix and max? Could you do white sock, black shoe with shorts?
Yeah, maybe they'd cancel each other out and everyone would think you looked fantastic.
That's very trendy. Sort of like Andre 3000 did that. It looks awesome.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much what people wear in Brooklyn.
In Los Angeles, not in Brooklyn, I'm Jeff Horowitz.
And in New York, also not in Brooklyn, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.